Iraq's Abu Ghraib prison is one of the most recognizable images of the Iraq War, a symbol of abuse at the hands of American soldiers. Deanna Germain, it was home for 4 months. Deanna served as a nurse in the U.S. Army in Iraq's Abu Ghraib prison and has written a book about her experience, Reaching Past the Wire, as it's titled. Today she joins us from Minnesota Public Radio in St. Paul. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
And we'd like to hear from you if you have questions about Abu Ghraib or what it was like to live there. Give us a call. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is talk@npr.org. And you can comment on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Deanna, when you arrived at Abu Ghraib, you were a recent grandmother, and you had already been deployed longer than your initial expectations. How did you end up there?
We were activated in May of 2003, and I was supposed to go home on November of that year, but there were no replacements, and I was originally at that time in Kuwait. We continued to wait for replacements until April of 2004, and on the very day that we were supposed to leave country, our bags were gone and we were ready to go. Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld asked for 20,000 troops, additional troops, to stay in country, and we were one of those. Our unit was one of those. So it took a couple days, and then we were relocated to Iraq.
And you went to Abu Ghraib, and I think it's a place we can safely say most of our listeners have never been and never will be. Tell us what it was like when you arrived there.
I arrived prior to the news of the abuse coming out, so that was in April of 2004. And when I got there, the prison hospital had just been set up, and they had just started taking patients probably several weeks before that. So we were taking various patients from around the area. It was a very dangerous area at the time because it was also about the time when there was a lot of conflict going on in Fallujah. So we knew that we may expect American casualties as well as detainee prisoner patients. And we were ready to take care of both.
But it was much worse than you expected it. You describe it in your book as a sort of a corner of hell.
I had never quite been to a place like that. It, as I described it, it seemed like it was devoid of much of any life. It was like walking onto another planet, very gray, very stark. You didn't see much movement on the camp itself because of the daily and frequent mortar attacks. And so people stayed where they needed to stay to get their jobs done on the camp.
So even though there were a couple thousand people, you didn't interact with many people except those that were in your cluster.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Because of the safety issues there.
I want to read one excerpt from your book about this challenge of caring for enemy patients. You write, the biggest challenge in caring for our patients was that the Iraqi detainees were on one side of the curtain dividing our hospital ward, and our own soldiers were on the other. The enemy, maybe that detainee, put our men and women in the hospital. How could we set that aside and care for the enemy with the same diligence as we did our own men? It must have been a challenge.
It was, like I said, one of the biggest challenges emotionally to try to take care of both the enemy, as we're required to do, and our soldiers. It took a lot, I guess I would have to say, just digging down deep within to say, I'm a professional there and I need to do this job to the best of my ability to take care of these humans who come into my hospital, and I will do the best I can. And I needed to keep telling myself that, and we needed to keep telling each other that to continue to do this job.
And in your book, you talk about that while caring for a detainee, you would have to make your own judgment as to whether the individual was innocent or guilty, or whether it was safe to be there or not. How did you do that?
Sometimes I think just intuitively you could sense how someone felt about you, how one of the detainees felt about you. Thankfully, we worked with wonderful translators who were able to sometimes tell us, this man is not a good man. He might, for example, see or have heard something that he had said, or he maybe had seen a tattoo on his arm, and he would say, I will tell you, this is not a good man. And so they would help us figure that out. But in the bottom line, I guess it didn't make so much difference if I thought they were innocent or not, because it didn't reflect on the care that we had to provide for them.
Let's go to a caller, David in Grayling, Michigan. He has a question for you. Hello, David.
Hello.
Hi, David. You're on Talk of the Nation. Do you have a comment or question?
Yeah, at any point during her stay, did you feel sorry for any of the prisoners by maybe the way they were treated or just the conditions there?
Thank you. I did. There were many times when I did feel sorry for some of the prisoners that were there, not necessarily by the way they were treated, but the circumstances at which they got there. Many times people told us, I was just on a street corner and maybe in the wrong place at the wrong time, and they ended up there. And as a result, for that reason, I definitely felt sorry for some of them. I felt sorry for a young man that I write about, whose name is Sammy, who was a 15-year-old who ended up at our prison, only to be sent back out because they realized he was innocent. And while he was being sent out, he was on a bus, and an IUD hit that bus. So he was innocent. He hadn't been injured when he came in, and on his way out, he was severely injured, and we ended up taking care of him. And it's people like that, I think, that I felt some compassion toward.
Thanks for your question, David.
Thank you.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Tiana, you were serving at Abu Ghraib when the news of the prisoner abuse broke. And I wonder how that affected you.
And people are sometimes surprised by hearing this, I actually found out about the abuse from my sister, who emailed me. And I didn't even know that anything like that had come out until I got her email from home. And it was shortly after that that a lot of news media, of course, came to the camp. And we realized very quickly that there were a lot of people who looked at us who were there at the time as probably part of the problem. And very quickly that became very demoralizing. I think we went through all the different feelings of disbelief and guilt and anger. And finally, we just decided we needed to all pull together to survive what we hadn't ever expected that we would have to deal with at that point.
Do you still feel a stigma simply when you tell people that you were at Abu Ghraib?
Certainly. I thought I was past that until just recently, as I started talking about my book and going out to different forums as public libraries, for example. And I have had a few people who have come up to me or sat in the audience and said, I know there were more bad people than just those 11 that were charged. And in a rather glaring way, looking at me, and it just has recently come to my attention that I guess I still maybe have some of those same feelings that are surfacing, some of those visceral feelings that I had back then when people looked at us as who were there at the time as possibly part of the problem.
Let's take a quick question from a caller in San Antonio. Angel?
Yes, Angel.
Angel, yes?
Yes, I have a question. Not trying to get too much into the whole issue, but specifically for the young lady, if the prisoners who were being treated there, if their demeanor or their attitude changed toward you as the person who, you know, to give them, you know, who was giving them aid, if it changed over time, or if they thought maybe if they kept that mentality of you're the enemy and I hate you or don't like you, or do they really appreciate it? And how did your attitude change during this whole time?
Thanks, Angel.
Thank you. I do think that at first when they came in, the prisoners came in or the detainees came in and we started providing care, they were very fearful sometimes or wondering what are we going to do with them. And I think as they saw, they came back from surgery, for example, and their wounds were healing. We were looking happy that they were getting better. I think there was a good sharing back and forth. That they realized that we were really intent on doing a good job and trying to keep them alive and well. And I felt, for the most part, nothing but general respect from the patients that I took care of there.
Deanna Germain is a nurse practitioner at a pain clinic near Minneapolis and the author of the book Reaching Past the Wire. She joined us from Minnesota Public Radio in St. Paul. You can read about Deanna's experiences caring for Iraqi detainee patients at Abu Ghraib at our website, npr.org/talk. Thanks very much for being with us, Deanna.
Thank you.
This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm John Itzty.